Hi, my name is Christian.
And I'm Jose. And this is Coffee Break, a podcast about all things coffee. Before we get started, I just want to remind everyone to visit our Instagram page at coffee.break.podcast. Or if you want to write us an email, you can email us at coffeebreaktexas@gmail.com.
Okay, so on today's episode, we're going to cover the confusing coffee label. So there are some other elements on the coffee labels, aside from the roast and whole bean versus ground, that might be confusing for beginners. So we're going to share a few different topics that we think will reveal some information on what you're reading there, and also just give you some awareness of these other elements. So the first thing we'll start with will be fair trade coffee. And this has become more of a topic in, say, the last decade or so. Essentially, there's a fair number of coffee growers out there that aren't getting the right amount of, say, payment for the hard work that they're doing in growing these coffee beans. And fair trade coffee or fair trade associations work to fix that so that they can get a living wage and make sure that the quality is up to par as well. So if you see a coffee label with fair trade mentioned on it, that's usually a good thing, right? That means the coffee grower has been paid more than some others, and the quality is probably better than what you would expect for something that's not fair trade. But you are probably paying a little bit more, so that's something to keep in mind. But it does help people in the coffee growing ecosystem. So,
yeah, and to clarify a little bit, it doesn't affect the flavor of the coffee, right? It's not really going to have an impact on the flavor you're going to get from your coffee, but it does support the coffee growing industry, and you know, it helps the sustainability of continuing to get coffee for years and years to come. So important, something very important.
Yeah, and you know, coffee growing, just like any other crop that's grown, has its risks depending on the year, the situations that are happening. So for people to already not be earning a living wage before some sort of catastrophe happens, you know, life gets very difficult. So with fair trade, that just helps that coffee grower continue, hopefully, stronger, or at least continue through any sort of events so that they continue growing great coffee for people like us.
Yes, sir. Agreed. So the next item that you might see in your coffee bag, it will be the organic label in some cases. I know a lot of people seek out organic specific things. Personally, I don't always look for organic, but I want to talk about what constitutes organic coffee in this case and whether it's going to be very important to you. So I'm going to read a quote from the Washington Post in 2017 because I think they paraphrased it pretty well. The term organic is strictly regulated by the Department of Agriculture. In the case of coffee farms, this seal means that synthetic fertilizers and synthetic pesticides that can be harmful to farmers and wildlife are banned. The label also ensures that soil quality is protected. So essentially what this means is that you're not going to be getting a lot of synthetic pesticides. The USDA has a list of banned pesticides, and typically they may still use some pesticides, but they'll have a tendency to be naturally occurring or something of the sort, or something that is not going to affect the quality of the crop. So the issue is, and something, like I said, I don't really seek out organic, but something that I noticed is that most of the coffee that I buy doesn't have a seal that says certified organic. And it made me wonder, you know, we're paying a decent price for this coffee bag. Why isn't it organic? But I came to find out that some of the farmers typically can't or don't label their coffee as organic because in the grand scheme of things, it's relatively expensive for them to afford that certification when the business is already so competitive. So a lot of these farmers actually live at or close to the poverty line, and they have to pay anywhere between $700 to $3,000 per year so that they can get that USDA certification. Plus, they're going to have to put up with some governance from the USDA and all that stuff in order to maintain that. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of money for a big company, but these are roasters who, like I said, they're living at or near the poverty line, so they need to stay competitive. And yeah, they can pass the cost to you, but you know, that may affect the demand for their product. So that's kind of one of the reasons why we won't see a lot of organic. But even in many cases, and this is going to be hard to validate, but even if it's not certified as organic, they're still going to use organic pesticides, given the, you know, the farming natures of the areas that they're in. But they're just not going to go out of their way to get that certification.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's nice, right? It'd be nice if they could afford that sort of certification, but sometimes it's difficult. And that doesn't mean that these growers or, you know, folks within the supply chain for coffee aren't trying to be better for the environment and for, you know, their consumers. So
yeah. So let's go into the coffee variety types. You'll see things like Arabica, Bourbon, Geisha, and all that stuff all over your bag. So what does that mean, Christian?
Yeah, so we'll cover a few varieties just very quickly. This can get pretty convoluted because there's quite a number of them. But I'd say for us here in the States, Arabica is a very common bean type that we'll see more often than, say, Robusta. We'll talk about that later. But amongst Arabica, what most of them will be Typica, right? That's the... What I read in a website previously is like the forefather or the original. And then you hear what you'll probably see on coffee labels will be types like Bourbon. So Bourbon is another type, let's call it subtype of Typica, that's been characterized as being sweeter and also like higher quality. So that's probably what, if you see Bourbon, you'll probably be paying a little bit more than some others, I would say. And then another type that I've seen, and maybe you've seen this one as well, Jose, is I think it's Geisha or Geisha, depending on where you're coming from. Also another type that's even supposedly higher quality that I forgot what the price was, but it was like 100 euro or something for a very small amount. I think I might have that here. 250 grams of the Geisha type from Panama is 100 euro. So quite expensive there. And there's so many others, but those are probably two relatively common ones that you'll see, especially if you go to a place like Whole Foods or something along those lines. Any other types you feel like we see quite often in the stores, Jose?
No, I think you cover the ones that I typically see. You know, something I'm really excited about, and this is kind of off topic, but my mom is going to Guatemala, and my cousin, I was talking to him, and he's going to send me some coffee, and he actually has a coffee producer in Guatemala that is able to, that sells Geisha coffee. So he's going to be sending me a little tin can of Geisha coffee, which is like four times more expensive than a regular bag of coffee. But I am really, really excited to try that. So I'll probably invite you over so we can try that Geisha coffee together.
Yeah, man, that'd be great. I'd really appreciate that. It'd be an opportunity for us to try something new. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. Thanks for that.
Yes. Yeah, so as far as the coffee, the different varieties that you'll see in your bag, is it important to get, say, for example, 100% Arabica over Bourbon?
I think it depends on the person, is my take on it. Personally, for me, I don't necessarily need to focus on a specific type or a specific variety. Especially for my day-to-day things. If I'm trying to have like a new experience with coffee, then maybe, right? That's maybe a relatively rare occasion for some folks. My take on it is not necessarily. What do you think?
I agree with you. And I think this is going to become a recurring topic or a recurring saying, but it's really up to you. It's what you like. And I can't sit here and tell you, you should only get this type of coffee because that may not be what you like. So... And I think it's going to come up a couple more times in this episode.
Yeah, it's a great point.
All right. So do you have anything else you want to cover about the varieties?
I think that's an okay spot for now. I'm sure when we go into, say, beans for intermediates or, you know, then maybe we'll have a much longer episode on those.
Sounds good. So let's talk about the origins, because you'll see a lot of things that will say, oh, you know, 100% Colombia, or it will say Sumatra or stuff like that. And, you know, for someone who's not familiar with what all those origins mean, it may be a little bit confusing. All right. So first, let's talk about the original origin of coffee. So the coffee originates from Ethiopia in Africa. But that's not really what we're talking about here, right? But one thing you'll notice is Ethiopia's capital is roughly about 600 miles to 1,000 kilometers north of the equator. So relatively close to the equator. Now, for comparison, Colombia, which is another major producer of coffee, is barely 300 miles or about 500 kilometers north of the equator as well. So you'll notice that they all tend to kind of cluster close to the equator because they depend on that climate to thrive. So if you go to Google and you Google coffee belt, you would notice that there's essentially a belt that goes right around the middle of the earth, and it goes pretty much as north as Mexico and as far south as Brazil in the Americas. Or if you go to Asia, it'll go as far north as Vietnam or south as New Guinea, and Indonesia will be right in the middle of that. So, you know, I say this to say that all the coffee producing countries are kind of along the same general range of latitude. So coffee companies will throw a lot of like single origins at you, and, you know, that'll make the coffee seem better for one reason or another. But for example, I noticed mass producing coffee companies will put Colombia under coffee, like that is a premium offering, but they don't necessarily tell you why that is a good thing, right? But I guess in this context and what we're trying to discuss here, I feel like origins is a little bit too complex, and there's too many variables that we're going to try to remember to say, oh, this is the one origin that I want to try. Because coffee depends on the soil, the altitude, and the climate to kind of change the different aspects that you're going to get in your cup of coffee. So I don't know about you, but I don't want to memorize all that information about each country I drink coffee from. I don't want to know the climate from, you know, dozens of countries. So we're going to talk about more of those specific variables. So in short, coffee benefits from milder temperatures. In general, Arabica needs to be grown at higher elevations. What that means is that mountainous countries that have those right bands of temperatures to sustain the growth of coffee will tend to be coffee producing countries. So what happens is the higher you go in altitude, the lower the oxygen level is going to be. And that will affect the plant's ability to grow. And so instead of growing, they're going to focus more on producing the bean. So what this does is this imparts a more complex flavor or characteristic to the bean. You're going to get more acidity, more fruitiness. Some people will say sweetness, but to be honest with you, that to me is a little misleading because it's not sweetness in the sense of sugary sweetness. It's more sweetness in like a fruit, you know, that you bite and stuff like that. So don't expect like when it says sweetness, that is going to be a spoonful of sugar type coffee. There's other varieties like Christian mentioned, like Robusta, for example, that can actually grow at lower elevations and higher temperatures. So at those lower elevations, there's going to be more oxygen available for the plant to grow. So they're not going to focus so much on developing the bean, and you're going to get a more traditional or earthy flavor without all that acidity, fruitiness, and complexity that I was talking about just now. So I say all that to say that I know I just said a lot, that when you're buying coffee, I think it's going to be really hard to narrow it down to one specific origin to buy. But what you can do is just look at the altitude if they provide it to you. And they don't always provide you with the altitude. So, you know, this may be a bit of a crapshoot. But the higher the altitude, the more fruitiness, the more sweetness, the more acidity you're going to get. So just kind of a little rule of thumb.
Yeah, I would say those details are especially important when you get further into, say, you're developing your taste for coffee. And when you're getting to that point where you're looking at like specialty grade coffees, who are more likely, I would say, to provide this sort of information, whether it's on their bag or on their website, then it's helpful. Probably some of the more common, say, commercial or mass produced coffee labels out there would be less likely to provide this sort of information. You might be able to find some of it online. But yeah, it's helpful to know, right? And you can kind of figure out your tastes, try a few different things, whether it's coffee from Ethiopia versus, I don't know, say Vietnam or Colombia or, you know, Panama, wherever. Give those a try and see if you feel like you're getting that difference and then also enjoying those differences. So,
yep. You know, I mentioned it. I want to say in the very first episode we did that the more information that the coffee roaster gives you about the bag you're buying, the more likely it is that that bag is going to be expensive. So, you know, if they're telling you organic, fair trade, altitude, single origin, and all those kinds of things, you're going to be paying a pretty decent price for that bag. Okay, so the last thing you're going to see on the bag is going to be the methods in which they process the coffee, right? So you want to talk a little bit about that one?
Yeah, so for this section, Jose and I decided to break it up a little bit. So I'll cover a couple of them, and then Jose will cover one. So one, I guess, fairly common processing method, and I don't think too many, say, mass-produced coffee labels will have this type of information, but the ones that care or the ones that know will have it on there. But anyway, the first method we'll talk about is washed, and I don't want to dive too deep into these. Again, we'll save this for beans for intermediates or whatever we call that series. But the washed method essentially produces, say, cleaner coffee is kind of how I've heard it described. They, rather than, you know, having a longer fermentation with say the next process that I'll describe, which is called natural, washed tends to have a much shorter fermentation process. I think it's on the order of just like a day and a half or something along those lines. And the reason it's called washed is because after that short fermentation, they actually take the coffee fruit and then put it into, you know, say a vat or whatever it is, and wash the fruit elements off. So then they have just the seed, right? The coffee bean that we're also used to. So that's the critical elements of the washed method that is probably good to know at this level. So I can move on to the natural, which is, I would say, far more interesting. So natural is, you know, the original way that coffee had been processed. Essentially, it's taking, you know, the fruits and then allowing it to sit out in open air on these like raised beds that allow airflow around the entire fruit, and they'll sit there and ferment for about 3 to 4 weeks, and then they'll take the essentially dried-ish fruit, and they'll take that through a coffee mill. So, you know, instead of using water to remove the fruit element and come out with just the coffee bean or the seed, in natural, it's taken through a dry mill and just basically removed through physical means. So the natural coffee beans or beans processed through the natural method have been described as having a fruitier flavor. So if that's something you think you'll like, maybe lean more towards getting, assuming you can find a coffee label that has this displayed on it, then, you know, aim for a more natural processing method. Or if you want cleaner flavors, then aim for the washed method. And how about you, Jose? I think you had one more.
Yeah, so the last one is probably the one that's the least obvious as far as the name goes. This one's called the honey process. And the honey process is kind of a mixture of it, right? They'll remove the pulp and the skin off of the coffee bean, and they will leave what's called the mucilage, which is just like that covering right outside of the coffee bean. And then they will lay the coffee down and allow it to ferment for a certain period of time. And then there's different lengths of time that they allow it to ferment to achieve different colors of the fermentation. So, for example, there's honey yellow, honey red, and honey black, and that just means how long they were allowed to ferment. Yellow is the shortest, black is the longest. And what we'll do is that fermentation will impart sweetness to the coffee bean and will generate a very different tasting cup of coffee. So, okay. Obviously, with yellow, it's probably going to be the more mild sweetness, or with black, you're going to get something a little more, even more sweet or more fruity than you would have otherwise gotten with yellow.
Right.
I think as a general rule of thumb, if they're not specifying the color, you can just assume that it's yellow. But that's kind of the idea there. Once the fermentation is done, they'll that silver skin and the mucilage will be removed from the bean, and then it'll be processed and roasted, or it'll be shipped so that it can be roasted. Okay, so I hope that us going over this has been helpful to you. I know it's all kind of nebulous and kind of crazy. I think when this gets a little confusing, I think it's easier for you to rely on the roast level, which we covered a couple of episodes ago, and also the tasting notes that are going to be printed on the bag, and that'll tell you give you a better idea of what to expect from your coffee, rather than trying to decode every single thing that's printed on the bag. And then from there, as you gain more and more experience, you can narrow down what you like. But the key here is branching out and trying different things and maybe trying something you've never tried again. And maybe hopefully you'll find something you like.
Yeah, so we wanted to share with these concepts with you guys for your awareness primarily, because you know we've talked about roast levels and a few other elements about coffee. And these are bits that, as I mentioned in the very beginning of the episode, that will show up on coffee labels or maybe some other kind of places like the internet related to coffee that would be nice to at least have some idea about. And now that we've covered, you know, these bits of information, then we can move on to some new stuff, right, Jose?
Yes, sir. So next week, we're going to start closing out our Coffee for Beginners or Beans for Beginners series. What are we going to talk about next week, Christian?
So for the next episode, we'll cover a few more details regarding the process of making coffee, and then we'll wrap up the series of Beans for Beginners. So the other topics that we'll cover in that next episode will be, you know, the significance of water in your process. Maybe if you don't want a grinder, how else can you get good coffee? And then also other methods. So we covered three, right, a couple of episodes ago. We'll cover other methods that are a little more complex, such as the Chemex or, you know, espresso. And then we'll wrap up the series and we'll get to do some more fun stuff.